Welcome to Keeping the Faith. I'm Beth Gelman. My guest today has worn many hats: playwright, director, community builder, mentor. Most of you know him as the co-founder of that magical space known as the Studio at 620. But if I had to describe Bob Devon Jones in a single image, I'd borrow one from him. Bob once told me that he knew he couldn't fix the whole world, but he felt a deep responsibility to make his patch of the garden grow. That image has stayed with me ever since because I think it tells you so much about how Bob moves through the world. Today, we're going to explore that garden, where it came from, and what continues to make it bloom. Bob, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Beth.
You've spent your life in theater and the arts, and also in deep service to this community. How did those two things find each other? Did one come first?
I don't know which one came first, but everything. A friend of mine had to give a talk to Creative Mornings a couple of weeks ago, and the word was embers. And the ember that I have most certainly came from my family, and particularly my mother. And, you know, you just have to, you know, give it oxygen, give it thought, give it breath, give it decision. And that's what I've done. No roadmap, but that's how I occur.
That's great. Your comment about the garden stayed with me, that you couldn't change the world, but you felt a responsibility to make your patch of garden grow. So you were saying from your mom, especially?
Yes.
That sense of responsibility came?
Sense of responsibility. And also, you know, we never, like, I grew up in a one-bedroom apartment, eight of us, till I was almost nine. Then when they moved to the suburbs to a three-bedroom house and a den. I never heard of a thing called a den before. And I hadn't been in a house that large before either. But, and six of us slept in the same bedroom with my parents. I slept in the same bed with my two sisters till I was nine, and my brother David was in a baby bed, and my two half-brothers, Horace and Theus, were in a Murphy's bed in the dining room.
Wow.
But the normative response for that was everybody gets fed, everybody gets loved, everybody finds their way. And my mother was that person to instill that in us, even though at the time you didn't know you were learning something to be instilled. It was just life. And that's how I occur as a result of, you know, I'm my father's son, but I'm my mother's child. And that's how I came to be 71 years old.
That's so beautiful. When you look back at all the work you've done, the productions, the people you mentored, the community you've helped build, what do you see?
Well, I don't know if by nature I'm a prideful person, but I take a lot of pride in countless people have told me I've been their mentor. Sometimes in the moment, you know, 10, 15 years ago, or now. In the sunset of my journey. And so, because if you are a mentor to someone, I am learning as well from them. So it's been a very symbiotic relationship. And you have to, I don't know, it was Gandhi, say, be the world that you like to see or that you envision. Mm-hmm. And as I told you earlier, I've had the greatest welcome to this community from day one. And so at some point, it goes into gratitude. You know, you feel grateful that you've been welcomed somewhere and that your presence is anticipated and welcomed and encouraged. So anything that I've, and certainly with the help of Dave Ellis when we started the studio. But I think it started way before that, at that dinner table around that family of eight living in a one-bedroom apartment.
It's amazing. You went through something very serious during the COVID years.
Yes.
Would you be comfortable talking a little bit about what that was like for you?
Well, I can tell you in retrospect, because while I was in hospital for 9.5 days, apparently I was in COVID delirium. I was in the ICU, and they were just about to intubate me. And my doctor, said, I can get you remdesivir, which was a drug that they had an oversupply of in New York City. And Cuomo was saying, take some of ours. And I said, apparently I was lucid enough to give consent. And within 4 days, 3 days, I was out of ICU. In 2 days, I was on my way home. But the whole journey, I thought, when Jamie came to collect me at hospital, I said, boy, I've been gone the whole weekend. And he said, you've been gone 9.5 days.
Wow.
So I knew that it was grace that brought me through it, because unbeknownst to me, there were a lot of people attenuating on my well-being. Mm. And I had no, because also when you were in COVID, you didn't have any visitors.
Sure.
So, and then my phone broke. But, and, you know, I had this vision of sound retreating and retreating and retreating and retreating and retreating. And I remember saying or thinking, this is it. But the sound came back.
Wow.
And then, you know, I was out and saying, I've been gone a weekend. And he said, no, you've been gone a week and a half. So
it's amazing. When someone like you, who's always been a doer, is suddenly stopped, what happens inside? What did you find when things got very quiet?
Well, that's, I guess I kept the faith, but I don't even, like I said, I was not in my right mind.
Right.
But, and so grace had to come in there.
Sure.
And said, I got you. And then, and it's not your time yet. Because I was, you know, too sick to know. You know, and also being totally aware of your life up until that point and then have no control was kind of a new thing. Mm. But I gave into it because I remember saying or thinking out loud, this is it. This is the last sound I'm going to hear. And clearly that wasn't the case. So,
what about your recovery? Because you did come back and the world opened again. Did you feel that the experience changed what was important to you, or did it clarify something that perhaps you already knew?
All of those things, but I think mostly it made me grateful, saying, you know, I can be thankful and I can be grateful and I can be knowledgeable and I can be willing and I can be all of those things. And so it just reinforced that.
So you've retired, and I'm using air quotes, but from what I can tell, you haven't exactly stopped.
No.
What are you tending these days?
Well, I do a show out in pageant, Black History Pageant in Los Angeles. I did it for the last 3 years with a friend of mine that I've known since elementary school.
Oh, wow.
Charles Lane. And then, like I said, over the time that I've retired, many people that I've, quote, mentored have told me that it made a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, couple of times in my career, I looked over it and said, well, what can I do? What can I do? And then I can make friends with possibility, make friends with opportunity. Mm. And I found that in and through other people.
I love that. Make friends with possibility, make friends with opportunity.
Yeah.
Often people are so frightened of that, but it seems like still today you are open and you are waiting for the next opportunity.
Yeah. And well, you know, I've been retired now, two Junes, and I get a call from you or text or whatever it was. Come and, you know, share some time. So as I was telling Rick Kreisman just before we came in, the generosity of this community, it could have happened to somewhere else, but it happened here.
Right.
We had downtown last night at a restaurant on Central, and the streets are so vibrant with every sort of kind of person. And I don't know, I was a part of that, and pretty good.
Right, absolutely. What do you feel you have to offer now that perhaps you couldn't have offered when you were younger or busier?
Listening. And I think if I do anything well, it would be the listening piece, because I learn, I can react, I can be healed, I can be exonerated, I can be inquisitor. But listening, because I'm pretty sorted about what I think about A and what I think about B and what I think about C. But if I hear another person's journey, that enlufendates me, which is a word I learned from a play I did. But it just opens the possibility. And I love coming away from any interaction with some kind of awareness of the other person.
It's beautiful. I want to ask you about what feeds all of this. So a garden needs more than a gardener, needs water and light and good soil. What are those things for you?
Well, as I said to you earlier, certainly any power that I've had has been very much related to the force behind that power was my partner, Jamie. And then, but I have at least the advantage of having like a lot of close friends. I have a lot of friends, but I have a lot of close friends because I like knowing who's sitting at table, and I like setting the table. So, you know, and you pass this, and you pass the greens, and you pass the cornbread. And that's, in a way, as good as it gets, because if you're well-fed, you can go out and do things. Change the world, change yourself, change your perspective, change the time, change the dancing that you're doing. So, there's been, also you love seeing the growth, and I've loved seeing how so many people have nurtured this community.
Mm-hmm.
At the Woodson, at the museum you used to head, just so many countless things. And so they're finally fixing the band shell at Williams Park.
Right.
And if you want a Central Park, that's it. And if you want to liven it, put more music in it, more people in it, more people intending on it. So it's just been very, whatever I've done, I see, you know, like-minded things being done all over the town. So
that's nice. Can I ask you if the word faith means anything to you, formally or informally or somewhere in between?
It does, because, you know, and I'm not a libertarian type person. I believe in friendships. Mm-hmm. I really believe, and that you nurture them. I also really, truly, not even thinking about it, believe in breaking bread with friends.
Mm.
And that's something my mother taught me but she was the go. Our home, even our one-bedroom apartment, housed and held and convened many of our extended family for a meal. So I think if you, Beth, were to come to my house with a cake for my birthday, mm-hmm. I open the door and there's the cake. I go, wow. But actually, my wow is not seeing the cake. My wow is realizing that you had to go shop for the cake. You had to bake the cake. You had to wait while the cake was baking. Then you had to take, and that's what my wow is. So that you were intending on my welfare, and I didn't even know it.
Right.
So I like that. And so when I put people's name in the pot, when I am cooking, and we generally, if I'm going to cook for one, oh, let's make it eight. Let's make it 10.
Why right. Not?
And so I just think breaking bread with friends, new ones or old ones, because the new ones become old ones soon enough, that's one of, for me, the essence of living on this planet.
Finally, the question I ask all my guests, and I think you may have already answered this, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Is there a ritual, an object, or a piece of music or art, something that regularly connects you to your sense of purpose or wonder?
Well, there's several pieces of music. When Pavarotti sings Messen Dorma and hits that crescendo then, if I'm sitting in a chair, I have to fall to the floor. There's a song by James Taylor that helped me with a friend when I was in high school. I was thinking of running away from home, and it's called, In my mind, I'm going to Carolina. Mm-hmm. Can't you see? That song means everything to me. Also, there was a song by Jackson Browne called These Days, and when I was going to drama school in London, I played every single day. There's just a longing and a supplement, not supplement, but sublime plea in it to have this all make some kind of sense. And then I also, anything by Tchaikovsky, all of the Motown catalog, Guernica by Picasso. I was in New York and I saw this exhibition on Van Gogh. And I paid my ticket and went in, and I stepped right back out and saw this self-portrait that he did. I had to leave the museum and collect myself. And then I went back in. So creative work speaks to me in hieroglyphics or in brushstroke or in tonal modulation. Also, I pull from the water. We live in the old Southeast opposite Lassing Park. In upstate New York, we live on a lake. I pull from the water because, you know, if you're functioning in this society right now, there's a lot to keep you agitated. And so sometimes you need a balm in Gilead. And I get it from that. And then again, just knowing people.
It is wonderful to see that you're able to nourish yourself in so many extraordinary ways. I want to thank you again for being with us today, Bob. I hope everyone who's listening is inspired to do a little gardening for themselves. Until next time, I'm Beth Gelman, helping you to keep the faith.
Right on.